Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, Ben Standing here. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means I will be at FedEx Field Sunday for what is a sneaky big game as the Washington Commanders host the Atlanta Falcons. Commanders 6-5, Falcons 5-6. It is a playoff push here for the Commanders. I know we may not have thought that some time back, but here they are. To help me discuss that, the latest on Chase Young and some of the other injuries, and just kind of the vibe of this team, and really some just random silliness with my guy Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington. It was a, we were at practice today. It was kind of the lazy practice situation there. I'm saying for us, I'm not saying the players were lazy. I'm just saying the general vibe, of course, the day after Thanksgiving. Hope everyone had a great holiday, by the way. When you go in the locker room on a Friday in general, it's a pretty sparse crowd. Today was no different, especially, I think, with the holiday. It was also perhaps the World Cup. We had some people getting ready to go. So Pete and I just kind of leaned into that vibe, and I really enjoyed the chat, looking at where things are at with this team heading into a big game. All right, so you can check that out here in a second. Of course, if you missed the podcast earlier this week, I had Dane Brugler, our NFL Draft Insider, give us his thoughts on the 2023 NFL Draft, things to consider as you're watching college football games here down the stretch of the season. And then midweek, Nikki Jabala from the Washington Post and I did a lot of fill-in-the-blank, true-false type questions about this team to try to get a feel for where they are at moving forward. Lastly, The Athletic. I always mention the idea of subscribing, and obviously I really appreciate how so many of you have done that. If you have been sort of hesitant, or you're thinking, or you want to give a gift to someone, the Black Friday deal is here. $1 a month for an entire year. Typically, it's somewhere along the lines of 6 months. This is for the full year. You can do that. Just go to any one of my articles, click on that if you're not already a subscriber, and boom, you can sign up that way. All right. So just a quick thing. Pete and I talked about some of this. We still do not know if Chase Young will play. He has been practicing. And based on Ron Rivera today, it felt the most optimistic that I have heard them talk about Chase Young in terms of where he's at physically. He seems to me like he is probably more likely now to play at least somewhat on Sunday. Definitely not a big role. We heard Rivera previously tell us probably 12 to 16 snaps. So that will be something to keep an eye on. But I'm feeling more confident about saying that Chase Young plays on Sunday, whereas before, in the conversation I had with Nikki, I was thinking that maybe he sits out this week, and then if he does, skip him for New York because of that lousy turf. And obviously, if he does play, we'll see if he's able to go there. Cole Holcomb on IR. He's missed the last three games, and now he's going to miss at least four. He's going to go see a foot specialist. Essentially getting a second opinion. Rivera said it just was not improving as desired. So a big blow there, because obviously, as we've discussed, it's just such a thin position for this group. But, we'll see what they do. For that, Pete and I talked about that as well. And then Benjamin St. Juste also out. Obviously, he's become one of the more valuable players on this defense. It's funny how, they're playing Atlanta this week. Atlanta drafts Drake London with the 8th pick, the 6'5" receiver from USC, and he's often plays in the slot, or at least that was the plan for them. And when they had St. Juste in the slot, part of that conversation was going against guys specifically like Drake London. And now, whether inside or outside, they won't have St. Just available. So that's all something to keep an eye on. Also, Logan Thomas is going to be questionable for this game, as is Chase Young. Everybody else practiced in full. Logan Thomas didn't actually participate in practice today. I think there's some optimism about him playing, because otherwise they would just be down to John Bates and Cole Turner. I'm a little surprised, to be honest, that they have not added a tight end to the practice squad, at least. But there you go. By the way, Milo Eifler on the 53 now, replacing Cole Holcomb. All right, so that's kind of the quick gist there. Again, I hope everyone had a great Thanksgiving, but I did feel like I wanted to give a little bit of a update, since it's been a few days since I did a podcast. So let's get to it. My conversation with Pete Haley from NBC Sports Washington, one of the co-hosts, of course, of the very popular Washington Talk podcast. And at Pete Haley, H-A-I-L-E-Y, N-B-C-S on Twitter. All right, here we go. Our fun, random, and hopefully insightful conversation about Commanders, Falcons, and a whole bunch more here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, joining us back on the podcast. It's been a minute on this podcast, but of course you can always hear him on the, what are we calling it these days, the Washington Football Talk podcast?
That is still the name. A name that I abhor a little bit, but still the name.
Ah, you know, look, it's understandable. At least he didn't change it to Commanders. Of course, that's the voice of Pete Haley from, do I say NBC Sports Washington or Monumental Sports? I really don't know. I'm actually.
I think it's technically Monumental Sports. We're like pretending to be NBC Sports Washington until the season ends. So just Pete Haley. My brand is strong too.
Absolutely. Well, look, I wanted to get in a film expert guy to come in here before
the Falcons.
No, you're right here. You're all over the film this year. We just got done at the Commanders locker room on Friday. Friday's always a pretty quiet day in the locker room. The 85% of the people are out, so it's a lot of us just sitting there talking to each other. That spurred on the idea of having Pete come back on the podcast. It is a weird world. Like, they have been to be in this post-Thanksgiving situation, and we're talking about the Commanders not just as, like, can they make the playoffs, which is still a question, but it feels like it's even going more than that, because you look at the schedule with Atlanta and then two games against the Giants. I think teams that people feel are beatable. This team is surging. They have the best record in the league over the last 6 weeks. And yet, I still, every time I feel like I'm moving towards that direction, I'm like, oh, well, hold on a second. I don't know if I can completely buy into this. Where are you on the, are they good? Are they not? Are they contending? Are they not?
But I'm settling on them being good and being a playoff threat. I just don't know if they're a threat in the playoffs if they were to get there, because their formula is so specific and we haven't seen them in a game recently where they've had to stray from it. The Eagles game was the royal flush of games for them. Everything came up their way. Last week was a little bit less, but they still ran the ball 40 times and let their D-line swallow up a really bad offense. The Vikings, the Colts, all these games were in the low 20s, high teens, and were able, the Commanders were able to stick to what mattered to them. They haven't had a game necessarily where Heineke's had to grip it and rip it 40 times. So until that happens, and I think that would happen against a playoff opponent or maybe against the Cowboys, in that final game if it's necessary, I think that's when we'll see that there are some flaws. But the way they're playing and the opponents that are coming up, I think they can win enough to qualify for the postseason, which is wild, because after the Titans game, I thought they were deader than dead.
100%. I mean, look, again, they were a Benjamin St. Just tackle at the goal line away from being 1-5. And yet, here they are. I keep asking at the press conferences or players, at what point did you think this thing turned around? Obviously it could be a lineup situation. It could be a commitment to a certain type of, game plan. It could be maybe a certain trade. I don't know, whatever it might be. Is there a spot for you? I mean, I'll give you mine if you need to contemplate it for a second, but is there something for you that signaled why this thing has turned around or when it turned around?
Yeah, I mean, there's Brian Robinson. I think the secondary, the D-line gets a ton of credit, and rightfully so, but the secondary being able to get these safeties on the field all at once is really good. But I'll go maybe just for the hell of being like anecdotal and artistic. That game against the Packers where McLaurin and Taylor hooked up for that late third down pass. They had the touchdown earlier where Terry came to the sideline and just was going nuts. I'll say Terry McLaurin feeling like he's a part of the offense again and being able to ascend to like a leader where he's not being underutilized or not targeted, but being involved constantly and letting his mystique blossom has been a really big turning point. Because I think Terry is one of the rare receivers in the NFL who will get O-linemen and running backs and safeties to follow him. Normally it's the quarterback or maybe a linebacker, the guys who are in the middle of things. But Terry has that ability to galvanize, and I think him in that Packers game feeling like, okay, I'm the star again has been really helpful.
You know what's so interesting is like typically, I think for a lot of teams, but maybe this one in particular, when somebody gets signed to a big contract, it's like, oh boy. Are they going to get, you know, kind of fat, kind of lazy, kind of full of themselves, whatever it might be. The two guys they have signed to extensions the last 2 years, it's been the literal opposite. Because John Allen, like, I'm not saying he wasn't worth the extension, but I think there was at least some wonder about when you're looking at the four linemen, is he one you definitely want to commit to first, even though he was the first one picked. And then last year, he has his best year. And this year may be better than that year. And Terry McLaurin, you know, he's obviously been kind of the same. I don't mean that in a bad way. But the difference is he's become far more alpha. And it's like the money has given maybe both of them some extra level of confidence to say, I can speak up. I'm believed in. I don't know, whatever it is. And that is interesting about McLaurin. His alphaness has definitely been showing, especially during this last stretch, for reasons like you're saying. They're also getting him the ball. But he's making those plays, the 50-50 balls, and just being, you know, that guy, as Ben grunts.
Yeah, yeah. There are a couple alphas in this room. There are a couple alphas there in that locker room over there. I was, of course, referring to Ben and I. Like Cam Curl, if you sign him to an extension this offseason, I could see him being a guy like that who, you know, the way he plays, the way he studies, I don't fear him all of a sudden falling off a cliff and not caring about football anymore. It is a good sign. And does Ron deserve credit? No, I don't know, because neither of these guys were players he found, but he at least took the strides to lock them up, and both of them are delivering, and you got to keep hitting on the cornerstones like that. So it'll be interesting. Is Duron now one of those? Is Cam Curl a priority? Montez down the line, and Chase Young in a couple years too. But so far, so good on the doling out of the major contracts for keeping guys around in the Rivera era.
Let's talk about a little bit about this game. Throughout the offseason, I was like the bit of like, who's the most indispensable player on the team? And I've said, like, Cole Holcomb to me has got to be higher up than like maybe what his ability is, because of the fact not only is he calling the plays, the depth is pretty questionable behind him. And today they place him on IR, so he's out at least 4 weeks, and you know they still have that issue. And yet today is a day in which I don't even need, because now we haven't played without him for 3 weeks, so we've sort of seen what they're going to do. No Benjamin St. Juice for the Atlanta game. This to me is potentially huge. I don't know if problem is overstated, but like, I have literally no idea who is going to play outside corner. I don't know they even have one. They certainly don't have one that's proven. And therefore, it's really going to be interesting to see this. I think this is a huge deal. I think you pointed out, though, this is maybe a good game for this to be a big deal because of the opponent style. But at the same point, no St. Juste, not great.
Yeah. Falcons only have three guys with over 25 catches this year, and one of them is Kyle Pitts, who's on IR as well. So I guess if you're going to be really thin at corner, this is a good time between their receivers and Mariota at quarterback. Could it be Christian Holmes? Seventh-round rookie. He's been great on specials, but being a gunner versus shutting down a receiver on third and seven is a big difference. They got rid of Rashad Wildgoose out of the slot because they didn't like what he was doing, and he was getting a lot of penalties, defensive pass interferences. They gave Danny Johnson a shot. He had the interception against the Vikings. I thought maybe he would be in there. So maybe they put Danny on the outside. They have Corn Elder on the practice squad. They could bring him up. We thought he had a pretty good camp, but he's been on the practice squad now for 12 weeks. So St. Juste went from intriguing piece to really damn important in the span of about a month since they got rid of Jackson. And without him, yeah, it's Fuller and a whole bunch of question marks. And you can try and have all these safeties out there, but at some point you need a guy who can play corner and get a stop on a key play. And who that guy is going to be, I'm not sure.
This is why it's so fascinating where this team is at. Because, as you say, they're going up against Marcus Mariota this week. Atlanta, second most rush attempts in the league this season. A lot of that is also Mariota running. but it's they understand who they are as a team, and it's not a team to throw the ball 30, 40 times a game, as Kyle Pitts fantasy fans are well aware. I drafted him in the third round. I'm surviving despite that. Then the next two games, Daniel Jones, who I understand he looks like John Elway when he plays these guys, but again, a guy that you're not leaning into. And then right after that is the Garoppolo game. After that is Cleveland, which I guess would be Deshaun Watson by that point, but it's been Jacoby Brissett. This is why the Taylor Heinicke thing is so fascinating, because we talk about it in a vacuum of, is he good enough to take you somewhere? And yet we're talking about a defense like, oh, they're going to play a team in Atlanta. This is a kind of a playoff elimination game who we don't think has a quarterback that can take advantage of that. The Giants may be the same thing. And so it's like Heinicke is like, I think he's probably better. He's probably in a different class than some people think, even if he's not in the top tier, top half the league class, of course. But I mean, are we checking off which box are we checking off? Taylor Heinicke or Marcus Mariota, or Heinicke or Daniel Jones? I get that's not Brady or Dak, but I'm just saying, like, a lot of teams have not great quarterbacks, or quarterbacks that you're like, I don't know. That's why the fact that this is working with this guy, it's like, all right, I don't know. Maybe this is, relative to the league, is not as bad as people are acting.
Yeah, I guess it's annoying here in Washington because fans have been dealing with it for 2 decades. Atlanta, they just had Matt Ryan, so they can go through some some lean years. The Giants, like, they have the new head coach. There's future there. Maybe he can bring in a new quarterback, so their clock kind of resets. And this offseason was all about Carson, and the year before was about Fitz, and both those guys flamed out rather quickly. So I understand that the fans who are really dialed in here are like, oh my God, we have Taylor Heinicke. But yes, they're playing some other teams with some backups or some C-level quarterbacks, and there are ways to work around it. Your luck will eventually run out, probably, unless you're like a Garoppolo who just has studs all over the place. The Commanders are mostly star-studded on one side of the ball and not the other, or at least, you know, the quarterback isn't surrounded enough by a great O-line and really good running backs to make it work. But Heinicke, yeah, he can definitely – their schedule's working out where he can definitely – lead or ride this team to the playoffs, and it's a lot of all these teams that they're playing are kind of the same height as them. They're not the tallest teams in the league, and they're not going to really make a difference in late January, early February, but they can beat them to get to the playoff portion, and then maybe the reality check comes at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You never know when you get to the one and done situation. You never know for sure. Chase Young, he practiced today. Again, Ron Rivera seemed to be more optimistic about where Chase Young is at than I think he's been. Where's the Pete Haley optimism scale in terms of playing this week?
Yeah, it's so hard because feels like we've done this for 3 Fridays now. We get the reports from national guys heading in the right direction, this and that, and then it's, we're going to wait another week. But next week, oh boy, he's really going to be ready. I meant to ask and didn't get the chance, but how the game at MetLife next week impacts things, that being that slit film turf that scares everybody. Would Ron want to play Chase this weekend and then on that, or have him debut on that next week? I don't know. I think Chase will end up playing a very meager role, but I do think he'll play. Let him show up in the black uniforms on Sean Taylor weekend in a big game, get the crowd fired up, and hopefully he can help. But the good news is the defense is so damn good up front that, you know, if they need to wait a couple more weeks, I think they'd survive.
I have been saying that if I had to guess, I said this the other day on the podcast, that he doesn't play till after the bye, because it's like, okay, if he's not quite ready this week, do you want to play him on that crappy turf up at MetLife? But today, I think kind of what you said, it feels like they're willing to accept that, okay, he's going to go play some snaps. It's interesting because typically the guy in that role has got to play special teams. That's not going to happen. Can you even imagine seeing Chase Young on special teams?
That'd be so great. Yeah, that would really set Twitter ablaze. I'd love to watch that on film, since I'm such a film guy.
Yes, absolutely. I was using my phone had a piece on the back that you could use as a stand, and I could not. It broke off. So to use like sort of a stand, even though I'm not even using it now because I'm just holding it, I brought in this NFL official record and fact book. Got a lot of questions, a lot of stats. Would you like to play a game?
Let's do it.
All right, really quick.
I like where this is going.
Really quick.
Ben's original idea was to record this on the walk from the media room to the parking lot, which would have been about a 3-minute guest spot. I think this has been more fun.
Yeah, and it was too windy. Pete made a producer call on that one. I just randomly turned to a page. 1991, who led the AFC and NFC in touchdown passes? And bonus, if you can get the numbers.
Oh, I'm never going to touch that bonus. And this is quarterbacks, not teams, right?
I'll give you a plus or minus three range.
Okay, so the numbers, I'll say the NFC was 26 and the AFC was 27.
The NFC was 28.
I'm in the range.
AFC was, I just lost it, 30.
Ooh, big,
no.
Big pass.
33.
Okay. This could go really poorly for me because I could just show. I'll do Mark Rippon for the 91 team just to kowtow to the listeners. For the AFC, no clue if this guy played in the 90s or the 80s. Dan Fouts.
Well, think of it like this. If it was Mark Rippon that year, who did Mark Rippon play in a pretty big game that year?
Jim Kelly.
Those are your answers.
Oh, all right. Was Dan Fouts a 90s player?
No, that was like an earlier 80s kind of a guy.
Thank you for
yeah.
not dunking on me.
No. You look, if you weren't born yet, I really can't junk on you here. All right, here's another random one. I can't believe anybody's listening to this at this point. Rushing attempts in the Super Bowl career, top three.
Running backs?
Yeah, running backs only.
Give me the breakdown, AFC versus NFC. How many?
Two NFC, one AFC.
Okay. The NFC has got to be Emmitt Smith.
He is on the list.
Okay, and then Roger Craig?
No.
John Riggins.
Very good.
Let's go. Wow, this is great that you're just finding ones with Washington ties.
You know, we got to fake it a little bit here.
And then AFC, Larry Zonka.
No, Franco Harris. He's got 101 in four games. Riggins is third with only two games.
Wow.
Most attempts in a single game, John Riggins still holds the record with 38 against the Dolphins.
Ooh. Fit right in with this current iteration of the Washington offense.
That's what's so funny to me about this is, like, I feel like I've lived this life before.
Doing one for you.
I feel like I've lived this life before. The where they run more. And by the way, I've been saying this for years. I hopefully somebody can who listens to this podcast more than once can remember when I said these things. But that there's such a dearth at quarterback, and everybody just wants to have this sexy passing offense so they can tell their owner they're going to get a lot of points and get people in the stands. But there's just not enough quarterbacks, and leaning on the run just makes more sense for some teams. And now, obviously, it looks like a lot of teams are kind of going that way. All right, Pete has opened up the book. Wish me luck.
Most points in a single season, it is top three, and it's two pretty recent running backs and then one very not recent do-everything kind of guy.
So most points in a season, so we're talking touchdowns.
Yeah, it's not going to be – there's no kickers on here. Well, one of the guys appears to have helped with the kicking game.
George Blanda.
Paul Hornick.
Oh, yeah.
He's second Packers, 176 in that 1960 year. You had him on your fantasy team. That was a late round steal for you.
Look. I didn't start playing fantasy until 62. So, no.
Just missed him.
I just missed him.
All right, you should be able to get the other guys. Recent running backs. One of them had a nice cup of coffee with the burgundy and gold.
Cup of coffee with the burgundy and gold.
Like maybe even like an espresso shot.
Oh my God, I'm terrible. Gerald Riggs?
More recent. Sean Alexander.
Oh, Sean Alexander. I forgot that
third,
he existed.
168, 8 points behind Hornick. And then this guy, 186, 2006, 31 touchdowns. Stud. Wore a dark visor. Played out west. Come on.
Am I terrible? Wait, so not Emmitt Smith.
Super recent, but...
Yeah, more recent. Oh, LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yes. LT.
Yeah.
That's my LT. You got a different LT.
I do.
This would be... I could do a whole podcast show for a year. Just flipping the pages and doing random records.
Look, in the offseason... Look, I'm sure, you know, at this point, this offseason, we all were wondering if this offseason was going to include an ownership change, a quarterback search, maybe a head coaching search, maybe a GM search. Instead... Pretty clear. Rivera, Heineke are locked in. Well, I'll leave the owner thing for something else. By the way, did you see Pete and I had some breaking news today?
Oh, yes.
We're recording this right before the U.S.-England World Cup match. Efe Obada, of course, from the U.K., he said he was going to watch it, but not just watch it. He's going to be on Twitch doing a commentary on the Men in Blazers channel with potential Commanders owner Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Yeah. F.A. Obata got to meet Wayne Rooney at practice whenever Rooney was here 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago. Now he's hanging out on Twitch with McConaughey. He was on his way to get a haircut at like 110, and this thing probably starts at 2. He was really cramming in the haircut, but that's pretty damn cool. And I don't know if F.A. realizes the connection of McConaughey being a Washington fan and potential owner, but it's a good way to get some FaceTime with that guy.
Yeah, also his hair to me didn't look like it needed to be a haircut, but I couldn't relate. All right, I've kept Pete here way too long, because lastly, are they going to win?
If I had no idea about Vegas spreads and just was able to look at this game objectively, I'd say yes, but the fact, don't need to break it all down, but the fact that they are 4-point favorites against the Falcons, they're 3-point favorites in Houston against a really awful Texans team, weirds me out. So I think the Falcons will win based solely on that. And that's a dumb way to look at it, but those people in Vegas seem to know things, and they really have an influence on me these days.
I get where you're coming from, and I like it. To me, this is like Atlanta is like a fancier Houston. If you can, they're going to run the ball, and if you can stop the run, you feel pretty good. The difference is Mariota is not Davis Mills. Yeah. They have some other playmakers. I mean, they've been good this year. I mean, Arthur Smith is a pretty interesting coach, to say the least. We didn't even get into the Arthur Smith, Kyle Smith revenge game aspects, but that's a whole other thing.
My non-Vegas breakdown is, yes, I think Mariota really stinks, and if you can plug up that run game, they have four guys who can run it, Mariota included, and then three running backs, but I think this D-line is up to the task. So non-Vegas Pete thinks this is actually a really good matchup for Washington, and like usual, it'll come down to if Heinicke can keep the ridiculousness tamped down and just kind of take what's there, as Scott Turner likes to say, and these receivers, and he liked to say. If that happens, then boy, I think they can win somewhat easily.
Okay. Any anything people need to know? You're all over social media. You are the the dominant force on all the mediums here. Anything people need to know?
I never plug my Instagram, and that probably seems smart if Twitter goes by the wayside. _PeterHaley on Instagram. HAILEY. I don't post a lot of great stuff. It's a lot of cat stuff. So if you follow Ben and you like his cat stuff, then you'll probably enjoy hanging out with me too.
Any head nodding?
Head nodding.
No?
I'm trying to.
That's fine.
I don't know.
All right. Well, look, just head nod in the direction of Pete. Always a great guest. Go follow him on Twitter. Read his stuff on NBC Sports Washington / Monumental Sports or whatever it is. Thanks, man.
Yep, thank you. Got to go watch Obata and McConaughey.